All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
Hello, I'm Alice Taplin, and welcome to episode 4 of Double Tap, Audio Boom's official gaming podcast. This week, I spoke to one of our very own resident gamers, Pedro Silva, who is an Android developer here at Audio Boom. We chatted about Just Cause 3 and the issues that can come with open world games.
The town of Costa del Porto. Burn it! And when he comes to protect the insignificant, kill his friends.
Just Cause 3. So it seemed to kind of slip under the radar a little bit. It wasn't as big as like Star Wars Battlefront was or Fallout 4. So why do you think that was?
The fundamental thing that we need to remember is basically this year has been an amazing year regarding open world games. And if you have the experience of trying to release a movie, for instance, when you're competing with Star Wars, for instance, like you just mentioned, it's not going to go down well. So I was thinking the timing was a bit wrong. And also the thing that the game itself, so basically it's basically repeating the formula from the previous one. So it didn't make a big of a dent, so it didn't make a big of a difference for people to basically jump on board and say, yes, I really want to play the game and be engaged with it.
Do you think it was a good thing or a bad thing that it was so similar to the last one?
Well, it all depends. When you repeat your formula, basically, you're basically making sure your fan base is happy. But especially new gamers, they want to jump on board and make sure that it's not just basically more of the same. And this basically doesn't play very well, especially when the game itself is very repetitive. So you need to introduce new elements, like more or less like Assassin's Creed is trying to do. So basically they introduced new elements at every release. The fundamental thing is basically the formula is basically the same. It's just explosion, it's just mayhem. It's more or less like GTA 5. But basically with the destruction levels basically at the maximum.
And you said there that the gameplay is quite repetitive. I've seen quite a lot of people saying that. So do you think it was, I don't know, in order to give people a chance to kind of figure out the gameplay? Because they don't give you many sort of hints on how to do it. You have to kind of work it out yourself.
You're just exploding stuff and basically you're trying basically to find different ways to blowing things up, but it's more or less the same. So you're using generally the same weapons, even though that during the progression of the game, you're getting more ammo, more weapons and all of that. But in the same, basically in the beginning and in the end, you're usually just using the very same weapons. It's always a rocket launcher. It's everyone's favorite. So yeah, it doesn't progress in a very favorable way. So it's those missions basically, oh, now you have to liberate two more bases and it's basically exploding.
I never really thought about it, Rico, but there's a difference between you look and you see.
Look at Medici. She's beautiful. She's a jewel in the sun. But you see Medici. She's completely rotten.
Soon, the world will know the extent of my power.
You see, Sebastiano Di Ravello is sitting on a ton of Bavarian, which makes him the agency's best goddamn friend.
I've seen also some complaints about load times, specifically from people playing on console. I'm not sure. I think they've said that it runs a lot better on PC anyway. Do you think that maybe a smaller map might have been better, especially considering also a lot of people have said that, you know, you can run for a while without really finding anything to do? So do you think they could have condensed it a little bit more to tackle both of those problems?
Well, that's always the dilemma when you have an open world game. So basically you can have a very small map, which is basically very interactive and all of that. Or you can try to expand your area game and make sure that basically everything looks pretty in a certain way, to make sure that the user is not always looking at the same scenario and always seeing the same mountains and same cars and all of that. So I would say that in this situation, and considering again, it's a game for blowing stuff up every 5 seconds, I would say yes, the bigger the map, I would say the bigger the experience. And considering I would say in terms of the explosion itself, it's very well crafted. So I would say it's probably one of the best I've seen in a game. And when you look at those, the water and the mountains and all the scenarios, you will say, yeah, this map is basically worth it.
I got a plan. We've got to show the people we can take back their cities and towns for them.
Rico Rodriguez has returned, born of the same fire that gave rise to my reign.
Why would you want to piss off Di Ravello?
Di Rico.
I'm Mario, my bro.
I am not your bro.
It's the cutscenes. A lot of people have said that they kind of ruins the experience. They don't really care about the story or the characters, and the AIs can be a little bit stupid sometimes.
You have to give it to them, so at least they try to add a little bit more to the story than just, you know, blows things up. That's why you have the cutscene. It's more or less like how I can probably make a comparison with Mafia 3, which basically you have the cutscenes and they are important to the story. Mm. I'm pretty sure that the studio is trying to make sure that the next game will have a bit more component on the story, so not just blowing stuff up.
Also, I was going to talk about technical problems as well. Like sometimes if you fall from height, like quite a large height, and you don't die, and then other times you're falling from a height that's not as high, and then you do die. But what are the worst ones you've seen?
Well, regarding bugs, it's always tricky because the it all goes down about what kind of physics do you want to implement in the game. When you're talking about just Cause 3, it's basically we're talking about a game that is more like cartoonish than actual real life. Players fall from big height and basically they don't die, which I'm assuming they didn't care about that because you can glide now. So basically you can almost like flying for a very considerable distance. So they will say, oh, people basically just going to glide, so they won't fall to their deaths. So yeah, we don't need to code that bit. I'm not sure if it's a bug. Probably. If they didn't fix it, it's probably not a bug.
True. Well, but they have released statements saying that they are going to fix a lot of technical problems people have been having. What are your thoughts on that kind of in general? Because quite a lot of studios are releasing things now with a lot of technical issues.
The industry is changing, and let's not forget that nowadays games have to achieve a certain standard for people to be pleased with that. So back in the old days, the graphics were not that important. Let's call it that, because even the technology was not ready for that, so you had a limitation. So now it's all about trade-offs. So people who are developing these games, they know the amount of time that they have. And we're talking about people that basically most of the time they work weekends to make sure that games go in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure that now that you basically can pre-order a game with months in advance, that doesn't help as well, because studios know that, oh, we had this amount of people pre-ordering the game, so yeah, They'll be happy wherever we shipped, and then we can basically develop upgrades every week or something like that. So,
what are you planning to do, son?
Something subtle.
And now it's time for this week's gaming news. The Witcher 3 has won Game of the Year at the 2015 Game Awards. Released on the 19th of May, the game received rave reviews from both fans and critics. It was up against Fallout 4, Bloodborne, Metal Gear Solid 5, and Super Mario Maker for the prize. Hideo Kojima was banned from attending this year's Game Awards. The show's host, Jeff Knightley, revealed that the Metal Gear Solid creator was told by a lawyer representing Konami, with whom he is still under an employment contract, that he would not be allowed to attend. Metal Gear Solid 5 won the Best Action Adventure Game during the awards and was accepted on Kojima's behalf by Kiefer Sutherland. Nintendo have stated that their new console will not be the next Wii or Wii U. New president Tatsumi Kimishima stated, "We have to move away from these platforms," and called the console, codenamed NX, unique. World records aren't just about having long fingernails, sticking an abnormal amount of pegs to your face, or hoping you're lucky enough to be born over 8 feet tall. With access to video games ever increasing, and the professional games industry booming in recent years, gamers from all backgrounds have been having a go at breaking records old and new. So much so, in fact, that in 2008, Guinness World Records started releasing a special gaming edition of their book. I chatted to Stephen Daltrey, the editor of Guinness World Records Gamers Edition, and started by asking how they keep up with the sheer amount of records.
That's probably one of the biggest banes in our job, because records do get broken so quickly. They're really competitive. Speedrunning, which is the fastest completion, the people always trying to beat each other's times, trying to find the fastest way to complete a game, using stuff known as like glitches, various mods there's quite a few sort of speedrunning sites, like Speed Damage Archive is a well-known one, speedrun.com. When a new game comes out, especially, that there's a sort of a big culture around people trying to set records within those games.
And why do you think that gaming has, you know, got so big and has kind of continued to grow and to remain so popular over the years?
That's quite an interesting question as well, because I think one of the biggest developments we've sort of seen with games in sort of recent years is with mobile platforms. I think on top of that, the games became more powerful on platforms and PlayStation 4 and Xbox One and PCs. At the same time, mobile phones have all become really strong gaming machines. So we've seen like a hark back to a lot of retro gaming gameplay. And I think that has broadened the appeal. So I think everyone owns a mobile phone and you sit on the train and you'll see anyone who now plays games.
And how do you think that the book itself has grown since its 2008 edition?
The sort of social media and the esports kind of records we are getting now, they didn't exist when we first started doing the book. If we're doing sort of back-end developer records, we're recognising, I don't know, most lines of dialogue in a video game or most polygons in a car racing model, things like that. I think we look at records like that, which were set in 2008, they're like kind of like, well, that's obviously been broken pretty quick because it's just like the technology and the hardware's improved. But I think with stuff like Twitch and YouTube gaming, I mean, Twitch is the video game streaming broadcast service. It's allowed a lot of people to do live record breaking online. So I think there's that kind of increased the competitiveness of trying to get sort of a set of high scores and bigger games, just more stuff out there and just more things to look into. It's a whole new culture to tap into.
So what would you say has been the weirdest?
Yeah, it depends on define weird. I mean, someone rode a pig in Minecraft for about 600 kilometres. It's such a silly, completely daft record, but it's like fascinating reading. There's the guy who in America who built a arcade machine, which is like, I think it's 4.6 meters tall, which is probably bigger than my flat. It's huge. We did a photo shoot with him and he's sort of sitting at that. Someone busked with a Guitar Hero game. Someone played FIFA for about 48 hours nonstop. This guy, who's some programming genius, created a version of Tetris, which it basically calculates your last move and works out what would be the worst possible piece for the game to come onto the board. So basically it's the hardest version of Tetris you can possibly imagine. I think he named it after a rude word in Italian. But that's one of the beauties of the games industry. It's so creative. There's so much imagination out there. And that's why I think a book like The Gamers One is just like so fascinating to read because of that.
So you mentioned as well the guy who played FIFA for 48 hours. What sort of tips would you have for people who were going to try and do a video game marathon?
Well, I think it probably helps if you actually enjoy the game. I did read about a charity in America who do a thing every year with it. I think it's one of the worst games ever. And they do a marathon because the game is so unbelievably boring and tedious. So it's like it's almost like a kind of masochistic thing, which I think is fantastic because it does make the record more challenging. But certainly, so you're going to do a marathon record. I think if you're going to be playing a game for, and the minimum is 24 hours in a game for us to recognise a marathon record, you've got to enjoy it. You've got to be into it because otherwise you are going to sort of end up sort of probably banging your head against a brick wall, or sort of falling into a self-imposed coma to escape the horrific boredom of what's coming out the screen in front of you.
And you've got a page on your site that's the Minecraft challenges. Do you think, you know, things like gaming records and stuff like that kind of brings the community together in a way?
Yeah, totally. The Minecraft one's great because in the this year's book, we did something as a first, which we did a 22-page section devoted to one game, which is Minecraft. And Minecraft is one of those just games that's quite open-ended. You can do anything you want in it. So you can either ride a pig or you can walk forever, or you can actually start building things and being really creative and using your mind and imagination, which is what we've kind of tapped into. But on top of that, we did, as part of that Minecraft thing, we created these 10 challenges for people to try at home, and that's what you refer to on our website. We got involved at a Legends of Gaming event in September this year in London, and we had one of the challenges, which was to most amount of wood gathered in 3 minutes. And I think a lot of people when they first saw it, they said, why is this even a thing? It's like silly. Yeah. But it's not. It's actually so competitive and so fun. This is exactly what happened. We had all these gaming pods set up in Legends of Gaming with this challenge from the book. And the queues were huge. People were queuing up to try this. And we had this leaderboard and people trying to beat the score. And when people did, they're like screaming, jumping around, hugging each other. It just creates this kind of real competitive stuff in there. So definitely, does it bring the community together? Yeah, totally. It's, I think, people cheering each other on, trying to beat each other's scores. That's why gaming's so much fun now, I think.
But what kind of are the other games that people tend to break a lot of records for?
I'd say the main one in this year's book, along those lines, is Super Mario. There's so massive culture around the whole speedrunning scene. I think one of the speedrun records we do have in this year's book, which was the fastest completion of Super Mario Brothers, at the time, we thought that that possibly could not be beaten. It was just almost like a perfect run. Every jump had been perfectly timed. Funny enough, I think a couple of months ago, someone's actually now beaten that time. So it kind of does progress all the time. But yeah, anything can be speedrun. A simple, like, start to finish platform game where there's glitches and people say expose glitches in the game, or they do runs which can't use glitches, so it's a complete end-to-end finish.
Have you got any tips for anybody who's, you know, wanting to be a gaming record breaker?
Depends what records they're going to go for. If it's a speedrun record, certainly I'd go to websites like Speed Demos Archive and speedrun.com, and I think because they do the leaderboard to all the speedruns, and I think where they have the main record holder, there's a lot of tips about how you've done it. So it's a lot of studying how those players have done that. Certainly going on Twitch, getting your own Twitch account, following a lot of the real Twitch broadcasters, because there's always live record breaking going on with Twitch, trying to do the fastest speedrun. Where we kind of come into it, we go in there, we actually find the fastest ones, we can actually sort of officially recognise them. So we kind of hopefully put in an authoritative voice on these records, kind of stamping them, because I think when people do these, they're not sure if they set the record or not, but we'll go around, we've got consultants, we're trying to research them. This year was the first time where we launched the Gamers Edition with the main book, which is obviously the one which has like the longest fingernails and the tallest man record, which has been going since the 50s. We launched Gamers the same time this year because it's becoming really big as well, and whereas before you used to publish it after Christmas, now it's become this sort of really pre-Christmas thing where the kids want it for Christmas, gamers want it for Christmas. It's a great thing to put in stockings. And so, yeah, I think that was kind of a really big thing for us. And next year's book will be our 10th anniversary of it, and hopefully it'll be go for strength to strength again as well.
Thank you for joining me for this week's episode. If you want to find out any more weird and wonderful gaming records, then make sure you grab your copy of 2016's Guinness World Records Gamers Edition. Join me next week for more talk on the latest releases, news, and exclusive gaming interviews.
Double Tap is an Audio Boom production written and presented by Alice Taplin.
World Records. Don't put that in there.